Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, and it's good that there's no set schedule because this one I finished ages ago and I really need to get round to it. Joining me today is Juliana. Say hello, Juliana.
Hello.
And one of the reasons why it's taken us so long to actually get to this book and start reviewing it and such is because there's some dramatic things have happened in our life, and one of them is, I was away on a work trip, and then as I was going to the plane, getting off a ship and going to the plane, I got a message from Juliana saying, and what happened, Juliana?
I was in hospital.
Yeah.
Because I fell down one of our beds that leads upstairs. How you would say
there's
that?
A ladder. There's like a high bed, like a high mezzanine bed. Floor
and,
kind of thing.
The ladder that goes to up isn't fixed to it. It's not attached. It's just laying on to it and climbing
and it went
up
zoop, and out from underneath you,
and it I gave a little last push to get myself up to on top, and then that last push obviously pushed also away the ladder, and I wasn't up there yet.
Yeah, so you were hanging in midair like Wile E. Coyote.
Yes, exactly. If it would have been a comic, I would have like just run in midair and steam, and then at some point just dropped.
Anyway, broken heel.
Yeah.
In hospital, and I came home and was like, oh no, and so went and visited at the hospital, and then I had to go away from another gig, and you were in hospital all that time, and it was a bit stressful. Maybe did I do a podcast recording then? I can't remember what the last podcast I did is. Actually, I could look at the episode list thing, but and then we came out of hospital, and then for the last week, it turns out that looking after someone who can't move is almost a full-time job. Not really a full-time job, but I totally understand it, why people who have to look after people, it becomes a full-time job, like a carer.
It is.
Yeah,
it totally is.
And so Juliana, not only got a broken heel, but also a broken back, although that's not confirmed yet, but we looked at the scan, because that's a cool thing. You go in and get this MRI scan, and you can see stuff inside of yourself.
After the scans, they hand you a CD where you can privately access the pictures and have a look what's going on, and exploring your body from the inside.
Yeah.
Which, to be honest, is weird.
Yeah.
And it looks sometimes a bit like an abstract painting or anything abstract. But it is pretty cool. You can see what's going on inside.
Yeah.
Because you don't have a clue what's actually inside of you.
But it was funny when we did this, you were like, oh, I've got a bit of a bad back. But none of the doctors seem to take that very seriously. They're all like, oh, you got something. Oh, it's okay.
No,
of course you're going to have a bad back. Yeah. You've been laying in hospital for a week. And you're like, yeah, but the back is still.
Yeah.
And then you actually got the scan. And we looked at it and it's like, yeah, there. Like, we just was like, yeah, that line there. That bit there is obviously a vertebrae which is broken. So it is very funny to see things inside. Idea, which brings us to this book.
Yes.
Anyway, that's kind of this book. We've got some other things that we're going to go on about. There was this, there's the Tad Williams book that we're going to get to at some point, the Other Land book, which we keep getting to.
You need to be patient with me there.
Which I was like, oh, because you sent me away from, you said, take my iPad, because there's no Wi-Fi in the hospital. You said, take my Wi-Fi, go home. I've already bought these books on my phone, but then just go into the iTunes and purchase them and download them and stuff. And we loaded up this one as well, the Slow Bullets too.
Exactly.
But it turns out when you're next to people, like old women snoring, and there's the TV on, and you can't relax, it's really difficult to actually get a lot of reading done when you're in hospital.
The weird thing is, once you have the time and you don't really are allowed to do anything else, your brain kind of doesn't let you concentrate on anything. I mean, I should write my final thesis about my studies, and I kind of do some work about it, but I can't sit down and read scientific texts.
Yeah, and do all the research.
Because it's so, I just can't concentrate on it. It's really awful. And the same with reading. And I start reading a page and then I'm immediately totally tired. This is also what happens.
Yeah.
When you realize that something is going, you can't see any scars or anything.
Yeah, with a broken bone. There's no bits of bone sticking out the side or anything.
But you can feel that your body is really, really, really hard working on fixing it, because I'm exhausted by it. Everything. So
it's one of those things that we're like, oh, let's go out for breakfast, and we get like 20 meters down the street, and it's like, okay, wait a second, and then because we're on the crutches, you know, on the what do you call them, the crutches or what?
Anyway. Underarm supporters or something.
With the technical name there. So with the crutches, it's like just a little bit here and a little bit there, and then pause, and then wait, and then go a bit more, and then pause, and then wait, and I mean. In a way, like, it's not that stressful. I mean, for me, the whole situation is like, oh, we're just laying on the couch a lot and
all day trying
and
out the new TV.
Yeah, we got a new TV and it's like, oh, Netflix is built into this TV. That's really handy. We can do that. Oh, and there's these other things built in as well. And we can watch YouTube videos and we can watch some tennis and we can, and oh, there's this John Williams concert on this. Oh, you can, you know, all these different kind of things that you just think, oh, this is, should be really good. It's really great. But in the end, like, we don't want to just sit and watch TV all the time. You're so much less productive. Yeah.
I mean, we were planning on doing this podcast for how long now?
Well, last week, but yeah. it just takes so long to kind of get it up together. Anyway, we've gone on 5 minutes about that. Let's get on to today's book. This is one that you could finish off pretty quickly, though, because this is a novella length book, and it's called Slow Bullets by Alistair Reynolds. Yeah, that's right. More Alistair Reynolds. While reading an Alistair Reynolds book by audiobook, which is, what was that? Not Revelation Space. What's the next one after that? Redemption Arc. So we're going with Redemption Arc, but at the same time we put an Alistair Reynolds book within our Alistair Reynolds book reading. But it is a novella, and yeah, Slow Bullets. It came out this month, June. So about 2 months ago, I got an email from a publisher saying, "Hey, do you want any books?" And normally I say no, but they'd already snuck into the email that one of the books was Alistair Reynolds. I was like, yeah, send me it as a PDF or an ebook or something. I'll give it a go. And they did. And so this is it. Thank you very much. Tachyon Press, not Alistair Reynolds' normal publisher, but because he has one, you know, he's got his normal publisher for his novels, but short stories and novellas and stuff like
something
that.
He
can do other stuff. So yeah, this is a book which is not set in his Revelation Space universe. It's not set in his Blue Remembered Earth universe or his Poseidon's Children universe. It's not set in the same place as Terminal World or The Prefect. Oh no, that's Revelation Space. Now I'm just trying to think of, you know, it's not anything. It's a brand new system. And for the first time, it seems like Alistair Reynolds has decided to not go totally hardcore hard science fiction. In other words, like, nothing is allowed unless he can, like, you know, picture it doesn't break Yule's rules of the universe, because normally it's like no faster than light travel, and that creates some amazing stuff. Did you read House of Suns?
I started it, yeah,
because that's one of those things where it's sort of like, because there is no faster than light travel, you have to go from planet to planet or system to system, and it takes thousands of years. So
of
like the time scale of the book is like, okay, and then another 1,000 years goes by, and then another 1,000 years, and that, well, not the time scale of the whole book, but that's the time scale of the
of
setup.
The universe,
yeah, the universe. The setup, the situation is like each character, each person, they're, you know, they last thousands of years. It takes them thousands of years for their character to develop and all that kind of stuff. And it's the same with Revelation Space. It's sort of like you when the book starts, you're like, these things could be happening 30, 40, 50, 100 years apart. But by the end of the book, you know, time dilation and relativity and the travel across between stellar systems, is everything comes together in one kind of setup there. So what we have here is a slightly different. It's not entirely sure exactly what's going on with this, but it seems like to get from one system to the other, there's this drive system, which I'm not quite sure exactly how it works, but it seems like you're thrown a long way forward in time.
You're kind of jumping.
What's that? Yeah, it's kind of like a hyper jump, but you're going from one place to another, and you go into like a sleep, and you go forward, but it's like you're sent forward in time thousands of years, and then just before you arrive, you're like kind of sent back in time to the perfect amount of time, so you're not breaking causality, you're not getting there before light would be going there, you're not getting there before information. It's sort of like you're arriving, so it's like you're traveling like just under the speed of light or just a little bit anyway, but this can go wrong, and it's like one in every 1,000 people don't make it on these trips, and you know, and ships go wrong, and it's kind of set up. So the idea is that there's different a war going on between different factions, but once the war finishes, it takes a long time for news to spread that the war is over. And I've seen this happen quite often in science fiction, sort of like, okay, there's a war happening and there's different things, and people turn up, it's like, is the war still happening here, or have you got news yet that there's been a truce or there's a ceasefire and stuff? And that's how the book opens, really, isn't it, with this
it starts with the ceasefire
at the end of the war. However, there's still a bit of lingering action specifically between someone called Skur.
I can't
remember her full name, but she's our viewpoint
character. She has quite a long name.
Yes, but it's brought down to Skur. Skurelia Timsukshunda is her name. Skurelia Timsukshunda, otherwise known as Skur, and she has a run-in on page number one, or pretty much right near the front of the start of the book. She has a run-in with a nasty character called Orvin, and Orvin is our is our Butcher of Tharsis kind of character that you're never quite sure. Like, is he? He's doing it. He starts off as like, is he a bad guy? Is he really a bad guy? Is he going to torture?
Is he enjoying it?
Yeah. Is he enjoying it, or is he just doing his job? And it turns out, no, he's a really nasty piece of work. Right away, you know that he's going to be nasty. Yes, and it begins with torture. Have you got anything to say about this?
It was quite hardcore.
It is pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
The slow bullet is this thing. Everyone has this kind of mind recording thing, like memory kind of unit thing.
It's a storage.
Yeah, it's like a storage thing, and they can track people with it and see people with
and
it.
It's quite cool. Somebody on the Goodreads comments review said, it's like a dog tag.
Yes, it is a bit like a dog tag. That's what it is.
You can store information on it, and you can scan it.
And also the idea being that after the war, they can go, were you involved in war crimes? Let's rewind back through your experiences and see what you saw and see if that's a good thing or a bad thing, which I think is quite cool. This whole book is about memory. Like, literally, like, it's like, this is memory. We mean memory. So this is the idea of memories. But these are called slow bullets, and you can put them in somewhere, and then they kind of go around and lodge near the heart and lodge near the brain or whatever it is. It turns out quite a good torture device as well. If you insert a second slow bullet into someone, it'll eat its way through the body and do nasty stuff along the way.
Yeah.
And that's what Orvin does to
Spur. That reminded me a bit of that part in The Matrix, you know, where they put in this animal thingy and trying to find the...
The tracker?
The tracking thing.
Yeah. But that was software, you know.
Yes. But it reminded me very much of that scene.
Yeah.
And it was quite interesting how you can torture somebody. And also you can explode it from the outside. You can trigger it from the outside to explode and just rip the poor person into pieces.
Yeah, so it can be used for tracking and
really,
punishment.
Which is handy if you have somebody in capture. If you have somebody in capture by the opposition, the enemy, and you don't want them to know anything about you.
It's sort of like remote damage control.
Yeah.
Which did that ever happen in the book? I can't remember if it actually happens. I don't think so. But it's kind of mentioned in this thing. So Skur is injured, but then the cavalry turn up and it comes in, and I'm not quite sure. And then she thinks she's dead, but she passes out, and then she wakes up on a ship. Do you remember the name of the ship? I can't remember the name of the ship.
Something with C.
Yeah. I should probably have looked this up.
I forgot it.
Yeah. Anyway, she works on a ship. Doesn't really matter the name of the ship. Was it the Aurora or something like that? No, I can't remember. And she's like, hey, I'm here on the ship. That means I'm alive. Yay. And then she realized that for some reason she's like on a prison ship or like a troop transport, which is only full of war criminals, but from both sides of the war. And she wakes up and all of the other war criminals are waking up at the same time.
Yes.
And I think we'll stop like the Caprice, the prison ship.
Yeah, that's it.
So that was her old name, and it's a refitted. It's been refitted from like a luxury liner or something like that.
It's like a
cruise ship.
And that bit, which was so fun for me, that it is a transformed former enjoyment hanging out ship,
pleasure ship,
which happened in our time. You know quite a lot of that kind of stuff when they.
Well, I work on cruise ships. Yeah, there was the Queen Mary and the Queen Elizabeth in the Second World War.
And they used it as a warship.
Yeah, troop. Yeah. Well, not as a warship, but as troop transport.
Like, well, just as that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they did the same thing with the QE2 in the Falklands War. And this is the reason why actually
maybe say what QE.
QE2.
Maybe not
Queen Elizabeth II. The Queen. Everyone knows the Queen Mary II and the Queen Elizabeth II and the Queen Mary. Yeah, they're big ships. Famous cruise ships, when I was actually working on the Queen Elizabeth II, once it was on like the 25th anniversary. No, it wouldn't have been the 25th. The however many fifth anniversary of the probably the 25th anniversary of it coming back from the Falklands War.
Yeah.
Into Southampton, and they had a whole display, and there was these Harrier things flying around because So it's a well known thing. Refitting,
it's something that happens.
Refitting cruise ships as troop transports, and that's what happens here. And
also, this bit reminded me very much of that, you know, in The Fifth Element, the movie, where the most of the action happens
on a cruise ship,
cruise liner. I mean, it totally looks totally different, and it has different things, but the big fight and uprising,
big action sequence at the end,
big actions on the cruise ship in space, which is fun. I really like the idea of having a pleasure cruising through the galaxies.
This has been refit enough that it's nothing like that at all.
Yeah.
But what happens is that on here, and there are all of the all of the prisoners are released at the same time, and nobody's in charge, and nobody knows what's going on. And of course, they start just fight. The war just begins straight away again. And Skur decides to meet someone called, is it Pred? Prad.
She meets him by accident.
Yeah, meets him by accident, and he's one of the crew members, the old longtime crew members of the ship. And she threatens him, and in a way, takes control of the ship by threatening to, like, blow up the ship, you know. It's sort of like, okay, everyone stop, or else we're all going down. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to vent the rings, like these centrifugal rings and stuff. And so, yeah, and then the rest of the book kind of plays out with Skur kind of being in charge of the ship and then looking for Orvin, who tortured her, and is Orvin there, and is not Orvin there. She sees him, and then trying to track Orvin down, and then, like, the politics of trying to control the ship, and also, like, what happened to the ship? You know, did we get to our destination? Yes, we did. Maybe not. How long have we been traveling? How long did it take to get here? What's happened to the planet that we're going? All of these questions that happen in plays through to the end of the book, which I don't think we need to go into all of the specifics now.
Anything, so people can still read it. It's quite new,
and it's not a long book, and it is, I say, worth reading. So let's get into some of the cool stuff in this book. Or so, what do you want to start off with? So,
I mean, you mentioned Pride already. He appears, and Skur and Pred meet, and the whole time of the book, I was wondering, is he the only capable crew member?
I think it seems to be pretty clear that a lot of the crew didn't make it. You know, clear.
It also is clear that crew members did make it, right?
Yes. That is true, but I often thought that. But the thing is, it seems to be, this is, again, let's just get straight into the meat of this book, or the meat of the criticism of this book. This is a novella. This could very, very easily have been a full novel. This really does feel like, to me, that Alistair Reynolds was approached by Tachyon Press, and they said, hey, have you got something for us? And he goes, I'll look back through my notes. And he found, like, a novel out. He's obviously got quite a few, like, outlines or ideas for novels. And it's like, yeah, this one here, I wrote a chapter of it before, or I was going to make it into a short story, but it was too. And it feels like he's polished this thing off. And what we have here is something that could very easily be a novel or a series of novels,
totally.
You know, of what happens at the end of this book, where they're going, when they're like, oh, and then we went from planet to planet. And I'm like, whoa, go back there. How can you do that? And that's sort of like, that could be a whole TV series of what happens at the end of this book when they're trying to, like, set, you know, whatever they're trying to do, but go from planet to planet. I was like, that could be a massive series, and this could be really...
Yeah,
like,
and so with different episodes that also then tell, not from only Skur's perspective,
point of view,
but for example, like the whole gap in between what happened between her falling unconsciously,
this is one of those things that I could go, this could, there's just so much more. And this was my, like, one line review on goodreads.com, which was like, oh, I'm really annoyed, that could have been a really great novel. And that's the thing. So I think all of these cases, you have to, when you're just writing a short story or novella like this, you can't have sprawling characters. You have to have, like, okay, there's the ship, there's this faction, and the neutral people. Okay. And this, it pretty much does this. It's like, okay, we need one person to represent this faction. Mm-hmm. We need one person to represent this faction. We've got this other guy running off crazy by himself, and we need one person to represent, like, the crew of the ship.
Right.
We need, at maximum, at any time in this story, 5 named characters. And what you have is at any point in the story is a maximum of pretty much 5 named characters. Mm. And when one of them dies, that character is just replaced by somebody else who plays the same function in the story, and then is again, that's it. And so to keep this story this tight, and it's amazing how much is in this. It doesn't feel like a short story or novella.
No, it feels when you read it, it's like so much stuff going on.
Yeah, it feels like amazing. A novel. It feels like a novel, and yet somehow it's only this long, and there are a lot of, I wouldn't say a lot of shortcuts, but a lot of people who just stand in for something. Like, Prad and is the crew. It could have been, like, in a longer novel, Prad would have been 7 or 8 characters, each with, like, minor complications, and there'd be conflict within the crew, and each one of the other persons, you know, that... I was going to say the triumvirate or whatever they don't call it there, you know, but the
triumvir
or whatever, that kind of thing that, like, oh, just like it's he's like taking pieces from other novels of his, you know, sort of like, oh, we're going to have 3 people running the ship, like one from each, that kind of thing. It's sort of like, okay, these have to be a cipher, and instead of sorting out big issues with, like, lots of people doing action, often it's sort of like, okay, you tell me what you're going to do, great. Mm-hmm. And then they just move on with it.
It feels like lots of dead ends. Like there are lots of storylines going on. And and then he doesn't... Like
he doesn't in his, follow in his, them all his
other is all his other novels that I read so far, and it's not so much, not many of them, but a few. And he always goes in very in detail in every storyline. He explores it very in depth.
Yeah.
And here is does there that he just mentioned things that are just passed by the side.
Yeah.
And then later on, you think, I wonder what was going on there. Well, I wonder how this was taking place. I wonder why this was happening.
Yeah.
And
in a way...
he's not like going into it.
I know, but he concentrates back down. Every time it ever goes like that, you kind of feel like you're in a much richer world.
Yes.
And then you concentrate down and then you're like, okay, so what actually happens? Oh, we're always coming back to Skyr, the main character. Mm. And the main theme and the main through line of the book, which is the memory issue.
Yeah.
You know.
Which makes it a really good short novel on one hand, because
yes,
it is that rich. It is not just like a short novel which is just kind of like one issue and then explored over and over and over again. It is a really rich story of many different things, many different lines of topics.
Yeah.
And he's putting a lot into it. And this had both sides. This is as bad because it's only that shortly touched. And it's good because it's really makes this short story then really rich of things.
Yeah. But in a way, I'm kind of annoyed that this isn't a full Alistair Reynolds novel.
Really?
Because
yeah, me too.
It's more interesting to me than his latest novel, you know, which is, again, it's about spaceships going through space and doing all that. But this is just a more interesting story than his last one. Even though his last book was not his best, it was okay. But this is something that was like, I wish he'd have spent as much time as he did on his last novel, on this novel, and just not put out his last novel, but then put this out as a novel.
Maybe he will develop it more.
Maybe. I think this could very easily be built up into a really interesting full-length novel, but maybe he thought that it wasn't going to have that that same level, or he just didn't have the same passion for it or not. But I could definitely see more stories being told about this ship and what this ship is doing.
Yeah, maybe not just taking this novel, this short story, and writing it into a novel, but taking ideas from that and taking characters and storylines into something to develop into a novel. That might be fun.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So, it's slight spoiler territory here, because we keep saying about this story is about memory, and it's about these slow bullets that are inside of people and their memories. But also, the ship has a problem with memory as well.
It really is. Like some Alzheimer's problem.
Yeah, the ship is slowly, it doesn't have as much memory, and it's slowly overwriting itself. And they're saying, in 1,000 days' time, the ship won't remember anything. It won't have any systems left. It won't have any memory of itself. It's already fucked, but there's other stuff going on there too.
And not like in our times where we have the books from earlier times left over.
Yeah, there's no paper.
There's no paper to just put everything down, to write it down for the later people coming.
So yeah, that's the whole thing. So the ship needs a slow bullet of itself, for itself as well. The next level out is that they arrive at another mild spoiler here, when they arrive at the planet that they get to, there is civilization there, but the civilization has forgotten something, and the civilization has kind of got a slow bullet that is sent away to remember itself and is sending back. That's another character. I don't want to get too much into the spoilers there. And then on the next level out, the ship itself is a slow bullet, is a memory capsule of, as we discover that the ship itself, this is quite near the beginning, we discover that the ship itself has been traveling for 1,000 years, or it's taken 1,000 years to get to, well, it's weirder, it hasn't taken 1,000 years to get there, but it's 1,000 years on from where it set off, and civilization
and time has passed.
Yeah, and a lot of time has passed, even though the time hasn't passed on the ship so much. I'm not quite sure how much
time passed on the ship.
Yeah, like relative, like what did relativity do? If they're 10,000 years in the future, 10,000 years hasn't passed on the ship.
No.
But how long has passed on the ship is not entirely clear.
Yeah.
Because again, the ship is losing its memory of itself. It's all
and
hard
everyone
reset.
Was in hibernation, so nobody has actually what's the word?
Nobody is what?
If you see
subjective sign,
no, if you
witnessed it,
yeah, witnessed it,
yeah. So nobody has witnessed it all the way along, and so because like the solar systems are all separated from themselves, but there has been a crash of civilization across many different star systems, and this ship in the end is kind of left as a little memory capsule. So we have this, like, you know, each human has a memory capsule, and the humans themselves are memory capsules of other things. The ship needs the memory capsule, so they got to do that. The planet needs a memory capsule, so they send one out, and then the civilization. So, like, on every way up and down the spectrum, it's talking about memory and ways of saving memory, and also the question is of, like, you are your memory, and there's a little hint in there as well. She's going, oh, am I even the person I thought I was, or is my, you know, yeah, that's kind of brought up. That's the kind of annoying thing, that's kind of brought up and then discarded in the next paragraph, and you're like, whoa, go back. That could be a whole novel.
One of my notes in quite early on page, where was it? 52. So quite at the beginning was that I write down, is Skr just experiencing a dream or illusion?
Yeah.
Which also could still be, even after the novel, could still be that she's just experiencing some virtual rooms.
Yeah, but I think that's a kind of get out of any story free
card.
But
it can be. It doesn't really say anything about her actual state. But what do you, apart from that, what do you think about the aliens?
I don't want to talk about the aliens That's not even part of the book. It's just like,
exactly. He's bringing in this totally different
I mean, it's so great because he just brings it in and says, you know, you've read Revelation Space, you know what the inhibitors are. Well, there's, you know, he's just going like that. And that's kind of been done a lot in other books. There's exactly the same thing in the, what was the book that I read called Deep Six? I can't remember the name of the author. Let's quickly, Deep Six by Jack McDevitt. He does a similar thing in his books as well. And again, it's quite like the Revelation Space because, you know, some of those people are archaeologists, and they're looking at these things and like, why are all these civilizations? Jack McDevitt does the same thing, and it's a similar thing here. But it's not, I don't think it's even needed in this book. I think they could have just gone, oh yeah, and civilizations collapse, and you're like, great, okay.
But it opens a totally new window to a totally new topic again. And where you think, oh, he must... I mean, it leaves everything so open that you think he really must have the intention to at least go on in certain directions. Maybe not exactly from that storyline, but then maybe in the same...
But he doesn't. He just goes, oh, okay, no, we're going to go right around it this way. Yeah. So
he's just touching it, and suddenly we're back to, oh, there are other problems.
Yeah, memory problems. Yeah. But so what else? What are the cool things in this book? Did you like? The thing is, there's not a lot to talk about because I've kind of covered the main points. I mean, we could talk about the characters, but again, the characters are just like ciphers for bigger issues.
And I'm not sure if I like Skr or not.
I don't think you're meant to like her, and that's the cool thing about having a really short book. Like, this character set over a full novel might be a bit unbearable. But in here, you're like, okay, this is the character. She's in a dangerous situation,
and she's just reporting.
She's getting through it. She's saying what she thinks. She's doing what she thinks. So it's not like the most in-depth characters. But again, that's one of the things that you got to do with a short novel like this. But I mean, I would give this book, what, 3 stars, 3.5 stars or something like that?
Yeah.
Because what there is in here, I don't have any problems with any of it. The only problem here is that I kind of wanted more of it all.
And he put too much in it.
I think he put a little bit too much in because there's so much in, it kind of feels like I'm missing out on a lot of stuff when it's not explored in more depth. If there were a few less big concepts in here or a few less... things, you know, I don't even know what to say, but a few less things referenced, I would have actually been a bit happier because it would have made it feel like I'm missing out on fewer things that are there going on in the story or in the background of the world and that I would love to spend more time on, but it's kind of not there, you know. And that's the same thing with the character. Sometimes I was like, well, this character relationship between these two people, that was kind of covered in 3 paragraphs, but I would have liked a bit more.
A bit more about to know about these characters in depth. I think that's the whole problem with that book. It has a lot of depth, but on other levels, it has too much depth.
Yeah. And some things... I think this comes down to Alistair Reynolds being kind of like a hard science fiction writer. He's not telling a story of a character going through a character arc. I mean, that does happen, but he's more telling a story of like, okay, here is a world, here is an idea. What that, like, the ship is the character in the way, and each of the different people are just parts of the character of the ship.
Yeah.
And the ship and the crew and the prisoners and those kind of things go on a journey rather than individual characters. So,
and the scale feels like a bit weird because it says they are survivors of like how many, 300 or something people?
Yeah.
And it never feels that big. I mean, 300 people is a lot.
Well, I think everyone's off in their own little world.
Yeah, exactly.
And stuff, and,
so they only always mention these. In those wheels, there are these many people. But it always
but Skur
just happens.
Always keeps herself separate.
Exactly.
You know?
It always just happens in that really tiny circle of people. And then the scales get a bit weird.
Again, in a novel, it would feel bigger. I think the ship would feel bigger.
Yeah.
Rather than all these people just being like hanging out and eating
killing
food and trying to stab each other and stuff. Oh, yeah. I just wanted to go back to this. I really love the idea of these are people of the book, but the book is slightly different. No, what's the thing? They both have the same holy book,
they
the two sides in the
two
war.
Two holy books.
No, I think it's one holy book. And that's yeah, but it's very close. It's like religion. It's sort of like, we have,
it's like
the Christian Southern Baptist and the Christian Northern Baptist. And it's like, whoa.
No, I think it's more like Jewish and Christianity, which are like really like in the roots.
But they have the same book,
exactly.
You know, the same, at the heart of it, some of the same books. The holy book can be the same book in that way. But
read in totally different ways, obviously. I don't know. It is not explained really well.
No, but I like it that in the end, the holy book is this poetry. It starts off as a poet. You know, she says, I have this poet, you know, I know the words for this poems or something like that. And she has this poetry book.
Yeah,
I
mean, she had to learn them by heart.
Yeah.
But then kind of said, I'm not really believing in it.
No. But it was poetry from the other side in the war, you know.
Yes.
The idea being that at one point they have to remember stuff, and they're pretty much legislating that you're not allowed to remember your holy book. And it's trying to kind of wipe out religion by edict. And
it's never going to work.
No, because it doesn't. No. Because it doesn't work. So I quite like the idea that the issues surrounding religion or the issues surrounding people fighting, it's like you can say, religion is causing this war. It wasn't the religion causing the war. It was the, you know, in a way it was a religious war, but it really wasn't a religious war.
Always think, is it really possible that it's so far in the future when humankind has a... Yes. No, well, I mean, no.
You're not kidding.
No.
You actually think that humans are going to give up holy books and all of that kind of stuff, even in the... We live in the science fiction future.
Yes.
This was a thing back in the, you know, in the Enlightenment. It's like, once everyone knows about science and stuff, we'll all be like pantheists and all the deists and stuff, and we won't have holy books and stuff. And that was the whole thing. We're now living in... We're living in a science fiction future that's so science fictional that science fiction didn't even exist when the Enlightenment started, and people are having exactly the same thoughts as you are now. And then we look at the current world and we're like, people are still... Have you not seen about ISIS and all those people, you know?
Yeah, I know. But
like, it's not as if rationality is ruling in the world. Well, it does in many ways, but it's not as if there are no religious wars going on at the moment, you know? The future is here. It's just thinly spread. And you think that... what is it? The future is here. It's just unevenly distributed, or whatever the quote was.
Yeah.
I can't remember who made that quote. Was it...
I don't know.
Don't know. I feel really stupid now. I made a quote and I can't remember even who said it. I think it was a science fiction author. It's one of those
things. Probably it's my deep hope for humankind that at some point they will just...
Point is that the people fighting holy wars now are fighting holy wars using technology, which we think is a bit basic, but is actually science fictional compared to the people using guns and tanks and rocket launchers and computers and video stuff. Like, they're using the internet, to spread their propaganda. And you're like, wait a second, but you're using all this technology and you still have these irrational beliefs and are fighting for them and are chopping people's heads off and making women into sex slaves and all that kind of stuff.
You can't just use the technology and then saying, we actually are dumbing it.
Yes, and that's the thing. But that is what happens. People use technology.
This is the weird thing about...
They use the results of science to fight against science. They use the results of rationality to fight against the rationality.
But this is also the weird thing about religion upbringing, you were telling me that at the same point in your life, at one point in your life, there were existing two worlds. There was the world where you believed in the world being 6,000 years old.
Yeah.
And then at the same time playing with dinosaurs.
Yeah, when I was about 12 years old, because I might as well say, I think I've mentioned it on the podcast before, but being brought up in a Christian family, I had two brains. Like, I had two totally different mindsets, and there was no cognitive dissonance. There was nothing in my brain which made, it didn't even occur to me that on Sundays, at Sunday school, and other times, and you know, I was when I had my Christian head on, I believed that the world was 6,000 years old, and then I'd read about dinosaurs and that they died out 65 million years ago, and this one lived 120 million years ago, and both of these, like both sets of facts, both sets of data, one mistaken and one, you know, one based on you know, irrationality, and one based on science and rationality. You know, there's two different worlds. Both of them coexisted in my brain at the same time, and they never interacted with each other. Because when I was talking about dinosaurs, Christianity was the furthest thing from my brain. And when I was talking about religion and or thinking about God and Jesus and the Bible and stuff, dinosaurs were the first. There was just never anything that came. And looking back now, I'm dumbfounded that these two things actually existed in two different parts of my brain and two different parts of my life so much that it wasn't at the time just like my brain was leaking out of my ears because there wasn't enough space in there for two ideas. But it's actually possible. And that's why anytime people say that, oh, you know, religious people are stupid, it's like, no, just the religion stuff just doesn't impact their life enough for it to ever like impact their, you know, reality of their situation.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
Everyone believes that prayer heals until they get you know, cancer or they break their leg and they go to the hospital, you know. And the few cases where people do believe in God or any other spirituality enough that they don't go to hospital, those make the news. Those are the weird things, you know. But for billions and billions of people, they get on just fine believing in total bullshit because the belief in the bullshit doesn't have any impact on them, because when anything important comes along, they then decide, oh, actually, I'll just go to the hospital. Or, you know, I'll do this and I'll, you know, pay this money. I'll do this. Yeah, I'll use this and I'll use this technology. And I don't believe in evolution, but I'll use these antibiotics. And I don't believe in, I'm not even sure what Christians don't believe in or religious people don't believe in these days. It does get annoying when it comes to climate change and that kind of thing. And people don't believe that's happening. But again, is that a religious belief? I'm not even sure that's now based in religion. You know, even the Pope, like last week or this week, was it this week? He was like going, hey, guys, what did he say?
It is happening.
He says that the world is turning into a cesspit or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, that even global warming now is becoming a religious issue. On the other side, the only people who are going against it's not a religious issue anymore. That's irrationality of a different kind. You know, it's irrationality of a, you know, conservative business, moneyed interest, oil kind of point of view. You know, I don't know.
It's so complex. We can't really make it complex within that one podcast.
I know, but I'm just saying that, like, these different things, we've gone really well off topic now, but the idea, but in the future, there's going to be the same levels of irrationality and people will be killing each other over the holy books.
Yeah.
And the holy books will be, you know, some people will be like, I believe in the second edition of The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. And the other people, I believe in the original edition of The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings. The Lord of the Rings is one whole book. And other people will be like, no, The Lord of the Rings is six books. And other people will be like, no, The Lord of the Rings is three books. And there'll be another faction going, the movies are canon. The books don't matter.
Yeah, exactly. What I just want to say, they won't talk about books anymore. They will talk about Star Wars original trilogy. Not the one for the special edition, but the original.
I went to Lord of the Rings because that is actually a book, you know, that people do study.
Yeah, but
Star Wars is
as much of a.
It's not a holy. It's not a holy text so much. Star Trek would be, because at least then you can learn the language more, and you know there's more to get into there. But anyway,
we were just kind of doing what that short novel was doing.
What, taking like going like going? Hey, here's a good idea, and then
but talking about big topics.
But we ran with it,
not going too far into it because it's just we can't do it.
But I do. Yeah, we can't not suddenly talk about these topics in more depth. But weirdly enough, Alice Reynolds decide to bring up these big topics of religion and stuff and then go, actually, that's going to be a minor point. We need people killing
You wanted to know more? Nah.
Yeah, we're not going to get any. Anyway, I did enjoy this. I thought the story, like some of the plotting was a bit weird, how they suddenly went. And then 3 months later, I'm like, whoa, go back a bit. But, you know, they kind of, some of the pacing is a bit uneven. But I enjoyed the story. The characters, again, not fantastic characters, but they did the job. So overall, I think this is a pretty decent novella, but it felt like it could have been bigger. And that's kind of a disappointment. So I'd probably give it 3 stars in the end. Only, not because anything is particularly bad about it or anything wrong about it. It's just, it felt too much like a taster. It's like Alistair Reynolds goes, hey, I need to write a book which is like, or something that's really accessible. And a few people have actually said, like, on the Goodreads SFBRP listener group, someone said, hey, how do I get into Alistair Reynolds? I was like, this is a good thing. Like, read this.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't have any of, he doesn't have all of the strengths of his novels.
But it also has all the big, long...
Yeah, it doesn't have the length. It's actually a taster. So, and I just saw actually here on Goodreads, somebody said, my first exposure, this is Nathan, rated it 3 stars. My first exposure to Alistair Reynolds, and I'll certainly check out his other work. I enjoyed the setting and the technology as always, but the dialogue was a little off and the plot was so-so. A solid 3 stars, liked it, almost really liked it. I'm sure if it had been longer, there would have been more room to expand on all the subplots and round off the harsh edges. And that's pretty much exactly what we've said.
Yeah. But and with all these other books, took us 40 really minutes to say it. You really get all of that.
Yeah. The rough edges are rounded off, and yes, it's greatly expanded. You get more subplots. It's really great. So I'd say 3 stars, and I think that's pretty common. Like overall, people on Goodreads have given it 3.65 stars, and my friends' reviews, which are pretty much SFBRP listeners, 3.42. So I think 3 stars is good. Yeah. What were you? 3 stars?
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking 3.5, 4, but then I thought
it's no way a four star.
No, it is misses out of. Of the in-depth of normal Alistair Reynolds, like in The Prefect, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
It is not comparable to that one. So 3 stars, I think.
When I gave it 3 stars on the 10th of June, 2 weeks ago, Jonathan said, 3 stars, that bad. We'll hear about it in the podcast review. And I said, it's a high 3 stars. I don't want to give it 4. Because then it feels like it's on the same level as some of his better novels, but it isn't. It's minor Reynolds, not major Reynolds. Mm. Think Pushing Ice and not The Prefect. And that's pretty, I think that's pretty clear. This is very much, you haven't read Pushing Ice, but there again is sort of like female characters. And there's lots of characters and there's lots of intrigue and there's a massive world. So, but it's, it isn't The Prefect. It's not Revelation Space or that series. It's not, you know, it's not Terminal World. It's not House of Suns. It's like next level. It's next level down.
It's smaller.
A smaller book.
Yeah.
So,
in every kind of way.
Also, Terence Blake wrote a massive long review of this. Like, did you see these notes here?
Yeah.
Like this. Like loads and loads of comments on my review. But then he wrote it up on a blog post or something. So that's pretty cool too. Anything else to say about this? Or should we just wrap it up?
Yeah, I think that's all we can say
about it. We talked way longer about this book than I was expecting.
Yeah, but we went off to different topics like Alistair Reynolds in his book.
Yeah. So 3 stars. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. You can become my friend and Juliana's friend on goodreads.com. And that's the best way to interact with us about books and see what we're reading. You can become join up with the SFBRP listener group as well. We're discussing stuff a bit there as well. Oh, somebody else commented on my review of Slow Bullets, which I hadn't noticed, but I just noticed it there.
Yeah.
And
if you have any ideas and tips for bones growing together quickly.
Yeah, if you know anything about bad backs or something like that. Oh, here's a message from Tips. Really enjoyed Slow Bullets, but it raised more questions than answers. Great start of a novel, but I wanted more. Why was she conscripted? How long had really passed? That was the thing as well. We didn't know how long had passed. You know, why was she on the ship? What next? Etc. Etc. Reynolds must have got bored, or the ideas stopped flowing. I don't think the ideas stopped flowing or got bored. I think he just like. He was asked for a short book, and he's incapable of writing really good short stories. He's very good at writing long, blocky novels and stuff. Yeah. Anyway, so that's a good one. So, what else have we got to say? I don't think anything else. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.